with the movies. Listen to me truly, it's not what you've been shown. It's Friends That Code. Trust us, we really know. Cody is not like the movies. Listen to me truly, it's not what you've been shown. Trust us, we really know. It's Friends That Code.
Hello, world. It's Mike Traverso with the Friends That Code podcast, where I get a chance to showcase some amazing people that I know that just happen to write code for a living. Folks, today's guest isn't just a developer. She has a bunch of other interests. I met her in her role as the organizer of the Central Florida Google Developer Group. We both are founding organizers of DevFest Florida. In my opinion, she's the reason that DevFest Florida has been able to be as successful as it is. But as we talked about other interests, I realized that she's also a project manager for a global entertainment company. Additionally, she runs her own consulting company. She's an artist. Some of her most beautiful pieces are large metal sculptures. Sculptures where she takes these large pieces of metal, shapes them, and welds them together. Like Cricket the Sugar Horse, a 7-foot by 10-foot horse made of sheet metal, rebar, and wire. You'd think working in metal that her sculptures would have these jagged edges, but they have these beautiful smooth outlines. Incredible, truly incredible. She doesn't just work in metal. She also sketches, paints, and works with leather. I mentioned earlier that she's a Google Developer Group organizer. She's also an I Am Remarkable with Google facilitator, a program helping women and people of underrepresented groups improve their skills and learn to improve their self-promotional skills. Just a really wonderful program. Today's guest also offers the services of a bed and breakfast in Kissimmee, Florida. So if you're interested in going to meet today's guest, you certainly can, and she'll even provide breakfast. With a background in chemical engineering, a master's degree in criminal justice, today's guest has a multitude of interests and excels in all of them. She's a real Renaissance woman, or polymath, if you will. Developer, project manager, bed and breakfast proprietor, community organizer, conference organizer, artist of multiple mediums, polymath. Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is Christy Kapp. Christy, thanks for joining us.
Hey.
How you doing today?
Good. How are you? Thanks, Mike.
I'm excellent. Thank you for being here on the show. I know you're a very busy person, and it's great to have you. It's great to see you. It's been a very long time since you and I have actually talked. So this is great. I'm having a blast. Christy, I ask all of my guests to tell us what they do for a living. So if you don't mind, please indulge me. What do you do for a living?
Yeah, that's always a good question with me. So I say for a living, I'm going to change the question a little bit. I want to say, what do I do for a living? So what I do for a living is I create things and I connect things. So that's kind of the core of who I am. And it doesn't really matter whether I'm creating or connecting code together, database queries, people, how people work, or businesses. Mm-hmm. So I just create stuff and I connect people, things, and technology together. So what that's led to is a life where I have multiple streams of interests and incomes that are all kind of running simultaneously. Kind of think about someone who is juggling plates or spinning plates on top of sticks, and they've got a lot of them going. So usually I have 20 things going at once. And so I've learned to kind of overlap the thought processes about them. So I'm doing a lot of thinking about the different initiatives that I'm working on simultaneously. So like you said, I am an artist. My current medium is metal sculpture. I'm starting to think about doing clay because I can do that when it's hot out, and trying to weld when it's hot out is really, truly miserable, especially here in Florida where you get like heat stroke. My husband and I do own the B&B, and we kind of dabble in real estate, some commercial and some residential rentals, which we've built up over time, a long time. I'm not young. So I take my income from programming and I use it to invest in things that hopefully later on, when such a thing as retiring happens, which maybe I kind of doubt anyway, I'll have some income coming in from those things. So like I said, I am also a technology manager for a global entertainment company here in Orlando, where I manage a team of people supporting different systems that support some sales and marketing activities. So that's what I do for a day-to-day income, the part that gives me an actual paycheck. The other stuff is part fun and part income. And during COVID, it's part watch the expense go out and the income not come in. So that part's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed how you answered the question. So, you know, I saw you give this talk on polymaths a few years back, and you mentioned how people automatically respond with, you know, I work as an X for, you know, XYZ, and they mm-hmm. automatically respond with the company they work for or who, right. like you, or how you mentioned, whoever signs their paychecks. Mm-hmm. And I know, and you mentioned you kind of took a little bit of an issue with that. And why, can you explain why that is?
Sure. The reason why is in everybody's life, who you are and what you're capable of doing is not always aligned with what you do to make money to support those things about who you are and what you like to do. So, it's just interesting how automatic it is for people to respond to that question, like, what do you do with, I work for so-and-so, and this is my role, this is my title. But that's not really what they do. So people wake up in the morning, they have some sort of an interest, whether it's video gaming, whether it's going outside and gardening, whether it's being with their children. That's really who they are and what they want to be. So I try not to answer the question with who do I work for? That's kind of why.
Right. And, you know, and you kind of, when you were answering the question, you know, what do you do for a living? You went across the board with all the different things that you have interests in, things that you're expert in, things that you're well-versed in. And, you know, you mentioned polymath. So mm-hmm. can you help the, you know, our listeners understand what a polymath is?
Yep, I can. So it's interesting. Our education system teaches us to be good at memorizing things and working in a particular discipline. Even if you look at colleges, they're like, what is your major? As if you're only ever going to have one, which isn't necessarily, again, it's not necessarily aligned with what people want to be. So what a polymath is, and there's a definition, it's a person whose expertise spans multiple disciplines at the level of mastery. So they have a lot of curiosity about a lot of things. They like to dive deep. They like to learn about it. And then they kind of, I would say, take the metadata about that thing that they just learned, and they can easily apply that to some other discipline. So not only do they like to learn and learn deeply, they take what they learn and they apply the patterns of that knowledge to some other discipline. So that's kind of what it is. So back in an earlier time when we didn't have as much technology and people hadn't created as many things to make our lives easier, polymaths were those kind of like amazing people like Leonardo da Vinci, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Edison, you know, those kind of people that would just dive into something, run a bunch of experiments, take the knowledge, and then move on to the next thing. So they were recognized for that because they were doing new things. So now we're in a world where we've gone a lot farther with technology and even just mechanization of manufacturing things. And so it's harder for a polymath to find something to dig into that would give them that same level of visibility. So to me now, being a polymath means being respectful of your creativity and nurturing it. So, and knowing that now you live in a world that doesn't necessarily appreciate that. So that's, we do live in a world of specialization where if you look at job postings around the country or anywhere, it's I want an X. Like you will never see, I want a multidisciplinary person who can figure out how to make their way in a new world with the whole business context changing, right?
Right.
Now, lately we've seen a little bit of that because, well, COVID changed everything. So the generalists are having a little renaissance right now, which is kind of cool. Generalist is another word for polymath in a way. Not exactly the same, but it's close enough.
Right. And I noticed though too, I mean, so when you mentioned there's a lot of jobs that are looking for very highly specialized people, you know, to fill those needs. What advice can you give, you know, other polymaths that are looking through some of those and, you know, are struggling to kind of, you know, latch on to something because of how highly specialized? And, you know, a lot of job postings as well, you mentioned that they are looking for generalists or polymaths, but some of them is, you know, they want that unicorn that is, again, a specialist in just multiple areas. So maybe not necessarily a polymath, but again, highly specialized in a couple of areas. So what advice do you give a polymath who's looking through those highly specialized job postings today?
Well, again, the first piece of advice is always be true to yourself. So like, make sure that you are picking a role, picking a job to apply to. If you're a polymath, you can do whatever you want to do, right? So you can, even if you don't know that discipline, you could go out, learn it, get certified, do it. But I would say make sure that you pick something that is sufficiently complex to make you happy for a good enough length of time so that your resume looks not chaotic, right? Because we do live in a specialized world. So if a polymath doesn't want to stay deep in something for a long time, they can make your resume look kind of crazy. I would say like mine. but throughout mine, I do have this common thread of growing up through the information technology industry, playing different roles, which has just given me the breadth to really be able to be good at my role. So because I understand networking and databases and programming and cloud computing and things like Kubernetes, it's easier for me to manage a team. So you can put it all together in a way that makes sense. So you have to be able to look at the job listing, know whether or not you're going to be happy in it for a good enough length of time, and then be confident that you could do it. And then in order to convince the hiring authority, you're going to have to look like that specialist. So make yourself look like the specialist, tailor the resume, get the right certifications that support that specialty, and apply. So I have some things written about this on one of my websites called cosmicteamwork.com, where I talk about recruiting issues as it relates to polymaths. So there's a couple articles on there. A really interesting thing is if you look at the early days of Agile and you look at the original definition of what made a really great Agile team, you had a role on there called a productive specialist or a generalizing specialist. So usually what that was someone who had a couple of deep technology skills. So they might know how to program, and they could also structure a relational database. Right. So in today's world, those combinations of skill sets would be a little different, but a real good, an intact functioning Agile team will probably still have a productive specialist on it. It's just that people don't necessarily recruit for them anymore. Early days of Agile, it was normal for all of us to be like that. Today, it's a little harder because the education, like I said, kind of trains it out of you.
Yeah, and those folks are kind of act as the grease that keeps that axle going.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because you are kind of, you know, tightened into this 2 week or however long scrum.
Right.
Interesting.
Agile should be agile, and it has such a rigid time schedule, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Ironic.
Yeah. And so that website you mentioned was cosmicteamwork.com.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We're going to put that in the show notes so that folks can find it and check it out and check out the articles that are posted up there.
Mm-hmm.
So you also mentioned, so one of your other interests besides technology is art. What's your favorite medium to work in? Mm-hmm. You have a lot. You work in a lot of different mediums.
I do. That's sort of a hard question. Right now, I do like the metal. I like the metal a lot. I'm working to get better at it. My welding is really pretty terrible. So I have to, I'll put it together, and sometimes I'll get other people to put it together so it won't fall apart. Put it that way.
Okay.
But I really like, I like cutting it out. I like using the torch. I love using the plasma cutter and just cutting shapes out, or sometimes I'll go get them cut by a water cutter and then assemble it all into some piece. Now, usually I just start with like a piece of chalk on the ground. That's how the Cricut started. I just drew the backbone of the horse on the ground, took a piece of rebar, bent it into that shape, and then stood it up. And then from there, I just make it. So I don't know how to explain. It just comes out in the right shape, basically.
And that Cricut that you're referring to, this is a 7 foot by 10 foot, metal sculpture that I referenced in the intro.
Yeah.
And we'll have a show note to put, a photo of it so that you can check it out. I mean, it's truly amazing. It's one of my favorite pieces of yours. But
okay. And Cricut was actually the horse of the woman who lived in my house for 70 years. She was one of the founders of Silver Spurs Rodeo. And so her dad's horse was named Cricket. So I named the horse Cricket, and it lives in the front yard at the bed and breakfast.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Cool. So Cricket's one of my favorite pieces for sure. Probably my favorite one is the one called Rainbow Angel. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's like, I have this obsession with skeletons and wings. And so Rainbow Angel is basically a red skeleton put together by a bunch of old tools and stuff. And then it's got wings. And the rainbow was originally to guard all creative spirits, because when I was making it was right around after Pulse, the nightclub. And so I wanted to somehow create a protector for those creative spirits that were destroyed in the Pulse massacre. And so the Rainbow Angel holds two bead strings. One represents the people who did not continue in this world, and the other string represents the people that did. Both are equally wounded, right, in different ways. So Rainbow Angel is a protector of creative spirits. I think creative spirits need protecting because they can be more sensitive. And it also is just a general protector. So after Kissimmee had the massacre of the two cops a couple years ago, I moved Rainbow Angel in front of the police station for about a year. That. Yeah. And now it's at the B&B also in the front.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So do you create art at the bed and breakfast? Is that something that someone might be able to see happening if they stayed overnight?
Normally, I don't create art at the bed and breakfast, like out front where the guests are. I do some drawing, but that's generally in our private quarters. But the welding that I do at my husband's motorcycle shop, which we have just been in the process of moving to downtown Kissimmee.
Okay.
To a big building. We just got a big building, and I painted it purple. So now it's very visible. You cannot miss it on Broadway down there. And it's called Violet's Garage. So Violet's Garage encompasses my art studio as well as my husband's work with motorcycles and cars. So if people come to the B&B, they can easily walk to Violet's Garage and request that I show them something that I'm working on. So,
cool.
Yeah, there'll also be some other working artists there. At least that's the intention when we do get up and running.
Very cool. Very cool. And again, I'm going to put the show notes for that, because the website for Violet's Garage has a lot of the images of Christie's work, artwork. So I think it's really cool, and it's important for people to check it out just to see. And again, one of the reasons why I Cricket the Sugar Horse is such a favorite of mine is because between the size, the colors, and the motion of the horse. I say motion of the horse because it does look like it's alive. And that's why that's my favorite piece. But yeah, that's really cool. So Violet's Garage, we'll put that up in the show notes as well. Getting back to the bed and breakfast for a second, right? How did that come about? Because most folks don't renovate their home and decide they're going to invite strangers or I guess friends you don't know yet to spend a few nights and share breakfast with them.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting too. So I think I mentioned at the beginning that we did some commercial and residential real estate. So I was all the time stalking Zillow trying to find a deal. And it wasn't really the bottom of the market, but it wasn't terrible. So I saw we'd been doing fixing houses, selling them, renting them out. And then I just was tired of doing it. So I saw this house on Zillow and it looked utterly beautiful. So I'm like, Tom, you know, my husband, I'm like, Tom, let's go look at this house. It's gorgeous. It has this huge wraparound porch, just spectacular. I'm like, we could just move in. We could just move and go live there. I know I never wanted to move, but I want to move to this house. So we went into the house. And I'm thinking still that I'm just going to move in. I don't have to change a thing. Nothing could be further from the truth. Walked in the house. It was raining because the air conditioner upstairs was just overflowing and dripping all over the stairs. And so we're like, wow, shoot. I guess we're going to have to do some more work on a house. And then, but I was still in love with the house. And, okay. But then it was too big. I mean, it's only two of us and we truly do not need a whole bunch of bedrooms. And we didn't even need the room upstairs because we were living in a small house, like 1200 square feet. To go to 3,300. That's a lot. Like, what are we going to do with it? So Tom decided to go see, what can we do? What can we do with this house? And he looked at the zoning and he says, you know what we could do? We could have a bed and breakfast and we could cook for people and have them come stay here. And that'll be another income stream. And I'm like, I don't want any strangers in my house. What are you thinking about? Like, what are you even, what?
Okay.
So it took a little convincing. He had to convince me.
Right.
But the way we did the renovation, we split the house in two. So there's our portion in the back. We have our own apartment. And the rest of the house is pretty much for guests. The kitchen is in the center. But they don't use the kitchen. We cook for the guests in the kitchen. But then going back to the creating and connecting mission, it actually fits with who I am. So I love people. So I'm like, okay. I guess I can do this because if I live in my house and it's separate from this hotel I run,
right,
then it's perfectly fine for people to be in my hotel. They're not in my house. Exactly. So I had to mentally kind of like change my mindset in order to be comfortable with people being under the same roof because they're really not in my house.
Right.
My house is a different area. So, you know, people live in apartment buildings. I can live in a B&B.
Right. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned this because, you know, when we were doing the first DevFest in 2016, I believe, we were running short on funds and where we were going to put speakers up in hotels. And I remember that you, I think, had just finished one of the rooms at the time.
Yeah.
And we were able to put Mike Gorky in there.
Yeah, we did. You're right.
Yeah. So
he was one of the first guests. That's true for the DevFest.
So, and that, like I said, it was just such a cool kind of serendipitous kind of happenstance that you kind of stepped up and said, hey, I have a bed and breakfast. And when you said that, I was like, wait, what? Like, it's like, wow, you do a lot of different things. But I mean, it definitely seems, you know, that you have this passion for getting to know folks or people and learn a little bit about their story. You know, is that where the passion for community organizing comes from?
In a way. And the other place the passion came from is I had to go through a renaissance in my career, right? So how do I explain this? So when I was young, women, the songs about women and succeeding were things like, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. It's stuff from the 70s. So a very, very positive, empowering music for women. So I grew up not knowing that I was going to be limited at all. And in fact, I really wasn't limited for the most of my career. So from the time I was 21 till the time I'd say I was about 45, I didn't even notice that there was a glass ceiling for me. Didn't even notice. Didn't get, you know, there was no, really no issues. And then later on, like after Y2K, and when I started getting involved in GDG, I realized that younger women had a whole different life experience than I did. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, women can do anything. But I realized that they were running into something different that hadn't been there when I grew up. So I'm like, well, I think maybe I have a responsibility to help re-show what was.
Wow.
So my engineering class in 1984 was 50% women, 50% men.
I mean, what do you think that difference is that those women that came after you are experiencing that you didn't? Is it just the 70s and that whole era of, you know, equality or?
So I think that was part of it.
Or striving for equality, I should say.
We it was everywhere. I mean, we talked about it all the time, and it wasn't just men and women. It was people of different races. We were all trying to get along and really work on that. And there was struggles, but at the end of the day, you know, I had a very diverse high school, a lot of diversity also in my college. So I'm not exactly sure where it changed. I have one theory that in Y2K, and if you look at the literature, Ed Yorden in the late 1990s did a lot of writing about the commoditization of software development, where no longer would it rely on those craftspeople, but it would more be more like a machine where they would kind of carve up the work and people would do a little piece. And then what that meant is you could take that and you could send it to some other place in the world where it could be cheaper because of exchange rates. It could be cheaper to make the same software. And so what I'm thinking, part of what happened, and it's hard, it's not, I don't know how to even begin to prove it. I'm just saying after Y2K, you know, people say, oh, the women left the industry. And I will tell you something, after Y2K, all of my peers left the industry. It wasn't women, it was everybody. Wow. So there's very few of us left from this era that just kept doing this. I had friends who started restaurants. I have friends who went to do construction. They just quit because after Y2K, and we'd done this huge staff up to fix all the bugs or potential issues with the four-digit numbers. Mm-hmm. We had a lot more people trained in the world on tech, and we had a lot less money to do tech because everybody just spent it all on Y2K. So basically we had a crash, and my peers left. So then what happened? Well, then what happened, I think, is we inherited a culture of other countries who were maybe not in the same 70s experience that we had. So now I think other countries are going through the same renaissance that we did in the 70s here, but they're going through it possibly later.
Okay.
So I think because we changed the cultural makeup of how we do technology work at that time, I think it just we're just going through it again.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, that's what I've seen from my perspective. But anyway, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I just feel like I have a responsibility to help encourage other people. So
right, and that, you know, a lot of people would see the difference and just be like, "Well, you know, sucks for them." And but you're actually doing something. So you started the Central Florida Google Developer Group, and mm-hmm. these Google Developer Groups are kind of they're not Google owned or anything. They're kind of community groups that kind of spring up, and they talk about, you know, most, you know, a lot of it's Google technology because Google does provide a lot of resources around different, you know, courses that they'll have all the material for that you can teach to students, or, you know, different kind of accreditation courses. So there's a lot of that material that comes from Google, But, you know, mm-hmm. it could be any kind of thing that you know, because again, it is community driven.
Right.
But one of the other really cool things, and by the way, so that's actually how, you know, like, again, how you and I met, because you were the organizer there. I was the organizer here in the Tampa area. And that's how we kind of, you know, we hooked up with Michael Prentice, and we kind of said, look, you know, we should do a big giant Central Florida developer Definitely. Conference.
Yeah.
And let's do it that way. And where do we do it? Oh boy. How about Disney World?
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I think we talked about that, you guys all thought I was crazy.
We're like, boy, that sounds expensive, Mike.
It was expensive.
That's
why we did it the first year at the Sheraton down the street right. from Disney. And then after that, we were like, yeah, we could probably do Disney.
Yeah.
And we moved it down the street.
It's a different level of sponsor, you know, working harder on the sponsors. And
yeah.
That was fun. Yeah.
Yes. It's unfortunate, like I said, in times of COVID that you have to do, you know, you can't do stuff like that anymore, but we'll get to that in a little bit. The one thing the thing I want to talk to you about is that, you know, so you're doing the GDG stuff and you're doing it for mm-hmm. years. I mean, you have a group where you have, and along with other co-organizers, mm-hmm. have raised that group up from, you know, two members to 740, I think, at this point.
Yeah, it's huge. We had other organizers came from other cities. We had one from Bronx and one from Atlanta that came, and all of a sudden we had this completely experienced group of leaders. So it's been interesting.
Cool. But you're also part of the Women Tech Makers, and yep. now you're also part of this really, really fascinating group I'd love to hear more about, which is called the I Am Remarkable program, mm-hmm. Or I Am Remarkable with Google program. And you're a facilitator for that. Tell us what that is.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll tell you about that. So along with like getting the additional organizers, I rethought my role. So, you know, I was pretty much the one that got it going.
Yep.
It's running on its own now, doesn't need me to make it run, mm-hmm. but where can I contribute? That's probably the best use of me turns out to be the Women Tech Makers. And I Am Remarkable, because again, I've just been lucky to over time figure out that I can be confident on my own, but it's not that easy for everyone. And it's not that easy for people that maybe come from a different background where they're underrepresented, either women or LGBTQ or other types of people. I would say even some of the polymaths who are struggling with trying to fit into a specialized world. So the I Am Remarkable initiative is a set of training or facilitation that we do in small groups to help empower anybody who's a woman or feels like they're in an underrepresented group to celebrate their achievements. So it helps people learn to be confident by speaking out. We talk a lot about using different words. We learn about self-promotion, that it is, you know, it's not bragging if it's true. If you've done it, you are not bragging. You are simply telling the truth. So, and it talks about some statistics and benefits of having a more diverse workforce, and things like that. But mostly it's about helping people learn to speak out about themselves and gain that confidence in their career.
Yeah. And that's a perfect kind of segue, because one of the questions I'm going to get to later is a little bit about, you know, tell me how you self-promote yourself. And that, you know, by the way, that is all inspired by the wonderful Brandy Morgan, who I interviewed, you know, on the first episode of the podcast. And she kind of mentioned, you know, hey, look, this is, you know, I've done this thing and I want to kind of help, you know, inspire. So that's the question we ask everybody now on the show, because it's important, you know, to have when you have a positivity podcast where you're talking to people about how to be positive and mm-hmm. how to overcome imposter syndrome, you have to learn how to promote yourself. You know, because if you're not buying yourself, then why should your boss? Why should your colleagues? You know, mm-hmm. why should someone in an audience, if you're giving a talk, why should they buy what you're selling? So I think it's important for folks to learn how to love themselves and then promote themselves accordingly. Mm-hmm. So that's a fantastic program.
Yeah. Some of it is faking it till you make it.
Yeah, it's true, but you know, a lot of it, it's not all faking it. I think it's more exaggerating it until you make it, right? But it doesn't sound as good. So
right.
Excellent. So we talked, and is there resources that people can find out there about the program, or you know, is it part of GDG? You know, how can people find out more about this program or get hooked into it in their local communities? What's the best way?
So I can give you the link to it. Sure. There's a website. You can put it in wherever you're putting the other links.
Yep.
And it's called iamremarkable.withgoogle.com. So it's not really part of Women Tech Makers. I learned about it through them, but it's broader than that.
Okay.
It's a movement to help. Really to just help the women and underrepresented groups learn to promote themselves. So I'll give you that information. And then I think on there is a list of facilitators and people, and you can become a facilitator by going through some training. Mm-hmm. Sometimes teaching is a good way to get your head inside of a subject.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we talked, you know, I we talked a little bit about this is what this podcast is about. I'm going to sign up for this training because I really want to help more of my guests, be able to do this and kind of help get that out of them. But then also in the process, help the listeners here on the podcast. Hello, folks. Get that same experience, feel like I'm talking to them and that they can then, you know, at least to themselves, you know, be able to promote themselves, be able to feel confident about themselves, because that's what this is about, and not to get overwhelmed with the imposter syndrome.
Yep.
Perfect. All right. Well, I'll move on just a little bit. We're going to backtrack back to the GDG stuff. And we talked about DevFest Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's continuing this year.
It's continuing.
Yes. So this time it's in a virtual format.
Yep.
Would you mind telling us just a bit about what the conference is, just a bit?
So DevFest Florida, last time we had an in-person one, it was really amazing because we added to the Google technology theme and the general self-improvement theme, we added startups. And so now the theme generally goes around technology, tech startups, as well as, helping yourself do any of those things. So it is, due to the situation, it's going to be all online, November 14th. I can't tell you about the speakers yet because we just did put the CFP call for papers out. I can give you that link. I put it on my LinkedIn.
Sure.
So we're looking for people to submit talks about, you know, whatever they believe fits in the theme. So I believe it's devfestflorida.org. I can give you the, you know, we can put that down
we'll
there.
We'll get the link up in the show notes after. I'm happy to promote this event because I, like I said, I've helped organize it, and get this off the ground for the first 2 years. And I'm happy to see this continuing. Especially in Florida, but of course, where else would you hold DevFest Florida? So,
yeah.
But it's
DevFest Florida that anyone can go to from around the world because it's online.
Right.
So it's different. Again, I'm supporting the team. My role for the past couple of years has been helping with swag. So I'm even today, I'm like, gosh, how am I going to do virtual swag? Because I sure don't want to just mail a bunch of stuff to people. That seems kind of labor intensive, right? What do you got? You got something there.
I've got the 2017
the water bottle. That's
Florida water bottle.
Yeah, the water. So, like, I think the nature of swag will change. Obviously, a virtual format's more like being at work. Mm-hmm. At a conference with a bag, walking around, meeting all the people. So, the networking, I think we're going to have to get creative on the networking sort of part of it. So, it will be a different experience for sure. And so, strangely, we were already. When we organize these things, we tend to do it mostly virtually, except when we're checking out a venue.
Right.
So I'd say that the organizing part hasn't changed all that much, but I think the experience that we're going to provide will be completely, totally different.
So I was on the MS Create front end, series of short talks and workshop earlier this week, or I guess last week, and they had this really cool thing where they were giving out badges, these virtual badges that people can associate with their GitHub accounts, I guess.
Yeah, that's cool.
And one of the cool things they did with it was they had people play a game along with it. So we'll talk after this and get into some of those details. We don't want to spill too much of the surprises for the DevFest Florida attendees if you do this. But so that's cool. And so, you mentioned kind of feels like work. I don't think when you do a conference, a tech conference like this, like the way DevFest Florida is and the way I've seen other ones do it, it all kind of depends on the implementation, because a lot of times it shouldn't feel like work, right? I mean, if you've got, speakers up there and they're engaging, if you're attending a virtual conference, you really should do it, on a different computer that's not your work computer, turn off your chats, turn off your phone, and really focus on it, because that's what you would do at a real conference.
Yep.
And that's, so you want to get the most out of it. You don't want your boss to kind of keep asking you for the TPS reports. Where are they? You want to focus on gaining the most out of that conference as you possibly can, because you're paying for it. You're there. You want to network with folks. So excellent. I'm glad to hear it's continuing, and I'm happy to promote it. So we'll do it on our, the show's Twitter. We'll put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And November 14th, you say?
Yep.
Excellent. Well, I'll be there.
Cool.
So if you're listening to this, find me. and how, is it any easier to put on a virtual conference?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Fair enough. It's definitely different, but not, I don't know, easier or maybe just different challenges.
Like I said, I'm really interested to see how this turns out, and I will definitely be there for this. Okay, cool. So let's get into some retrospective questions, if you don't mind. So these are questions that I ask everybody towards the end of the show, and it's more kind of advice questions and things of that nature. So you've been in software development, and now you're on the project management side of it, and you've been in there for a while. So what are some of the challenges that you're seeing younger developers struggle with? Do you have any advice or philosophy that you encourage developers to follow?
Yeah. So it's funny, because when I was a younger developer, I think I probably struggled with some of the same things that I see them struggling with now. And one of them is when you're in technology and you're good at putting together code, sometimes you don't always have the context that your manager might have. So, for example, I see developers struggle with managers telling them to go this direction and then go that direction. Mm. So the developers will say, well, but you wanted me to code it this way. Why do I now have to code it that way? Some of that has to do with just the leader happens to be able to see or is being told that there's a new business context happening, and so therefore we need to change the way we're doing this. I think the pace of that lately has been increasing, especially this year, where business leadership is figuring their way out. So I would just say, if you're developing something and you're getting frustrated because your leader doesn't keep you going in one direction, and that's very hard for you to do because you want to finish what you started.
Right.
I would say learn to detach from that outcome and say, okay, it all pays the same. Let me go apply my coding skills to the next challenge.
Right.
Right. And if your first challenge didn't get solved all the way, it's okay to leave that puzzle undone. Go to the next one, because the mind that you have as a developer is going to be needed to get that business to that new direction. So, but that flexibility can be very hard when you want to finish a line of code.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think That's a really true sign of a senior developer, is the ability to kind of detach and understand that you're still getting the paycheck, whether you're solving the problem now or the next problem. And so if that first one kind of deviates a little bit and where it ends up, it doesn't matter. Yeah, go with it.
But it also goes back to the beginning of our conversation, which is make sure that you don't have yourself aligned with that programming outcome.
Right.
So if you can detach yourself from your work product, then you can happily create work products all day long and do that in bliss and not worry about if it gets finished because someone made you go a different direction.
Right.
So it's just a mindset kind of thing. So that would be
great advice.
What I would urge. Yeah.
Perfect. So next question, what advice would you give your younger self now that you've had all of these career experiences?
So I would give my younger self some advice to be aware of the way different people think. And what I mean by that is not what they think about, not what they talk about, but the pattern of how their brains actually work. So call that like neural diversity. Mm-hmm. So there are people who are going to be very, very good at staying in a straight line and talking deep, deep, deep about what they know. That is who they are. There are other people who are going to be more like me, where you like to have interest in a lot of different things and you're going to be very good at most of them. There are going to be some people that can really only do one thing because that's all their brain knows how to do, right? So it's just the way that people think about solving problems. Every different kind of mind can be leveraged in a team to produce some really good outcome. So everybody's neural style is important, right? So I would tell myself, recognize those things, because in the past, some of the people that I thought were the most obnoxious, people, they were just really deep specialists. So like, the perception that you have a professor on an ivory tower, all he does is spout off stuff, right? He just is a deep, he or she or they, is a deep specialist in that thing. And that's all that they are representing when they speak. So now let's say you have someone who is always driving you crazy because they are thinking far ahead. And it's like, why are you thinking far ahead? We just got to solve the problem at hand. Well, You might be dealing with a polymath. And then, so instead of just saying, stop going over there and thinking about 5 years in the future, say, could you help me explain the steps of how you got to the point where you're saying that in this context of this meeting, where we're talking about our day-to-day operations, right? How did you get there? There's probably some paths. So I'd say learn an appreciation of the different thought styles, and learn how to work with those different thought styles, and then figure out how you can adapt to work with that. You'll have a much better team. And generally, probably if I'd learned that earlier, I would have been far less frustrated, because I wouldn't be trying to change people's minds all the time. It'd be like, okay, let me understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And then combine that with how I think, and then change how I say things so that the other people can understand me better.
Yeah.
Not to say, well, they just don't understand me, right? So it's I would tell my younger self to just slow down and really appreciate people as puzzles.
That is wonderful advice. I love that one. I love it. We should put that on a t-shirt, Christy.
People as puzzles.
Yeah. Treat people as puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we talked about this kind of detach. What is one thing that you do to escape and clear your mind from writing code or managing or anything related to technology?
I'll tell you what I do. So people, if you think about what we are, like, what are we really, right? We've got bodies, we've got minds, we've got eyes, we have ears, we have, things that we can sense feelings, like touch. And what we're doing with all of those different sensors in ourselves is we are interpreting waves, light waves, sound waves, somehow feeling. Colors are waves. Everything's a wave. So the way I clear my mind is to go outside and sit in the garden, honestly, because I pay attention to the patterns that the butterflies might fly. I pay attention to the wind. I pay attention to the smell of the dirt. I use outside to reset my senses. And what that does is it detaches the thinking. So then I'm not worrying, I'm not thinking, I'm just absorbing and using every sense that I've got. I think there's a Japanese thing called like forest bathing or something where you really learn to appreciate the vibrations that exist in nature and how gentle they are and how they can make your whole body feel whole and your whole mind feel whole. So that's how I do it. Other people probably do it different ways, but that's what I do.
That's so zen. And I'm going to try doing that because that's, I mean, it sounded so amazing listening to you talk about it. It was just like, why am I not doing that? Why are we all doing that? That we should do that more. So I'm going to do that. I advise everybody else to try that. Even if you're in a cityscape, you know, you could still find a tree and with a breeze.
So. Go take your shoes off and put your feet in the dirt and just sit there for a minute.
Well, depending where that dirt is. Yes.
You might have to put your own dirt down.
Yeah.
It's just, but the feeling of dirt is very different than the feeling of something hard that is man-made, like concrete or asphalt.
Absolutely. Oh, that's excellent. Okay. Finally, we want this podcast to be all about positivity. We mentioned this before. So this means that folks are going to need to love themselves before they're able to show love to other developers or people in the community or this big wacky tribe of software developers. So here's a chance for some self-promotion. We talked about this before as well. What about yourself are you most proud of or love the most or use to inspire confidence in yourself?
Oh, I always go back to art on this one. Okay. So the thing, if I ever have a confidence gap, I will pick out a colored pencil and just draw something or use a program on the computer and draw something, because the act of imagining something and then creating it is like the utmost in confidence. So my ability to dream, see, and then do is something that I'm proud of. You know, founded, grown, and sold multiple businesses. I've got multiple businesses going on now. I'm proud of that, hopefully not boastful about that, because it's part of my journey is creating these different organizations that produce things that people love. So it's, to me, it's just very fun. Mm-hmm. I love doing it, and I can't stop doing it, and I won't stop doing it till time for me to become energy, basically.
And I don't think it's boastful at all. I think, you know, and also one of the things that I want listeners to understand too, is that this is not something that you've put together overnight. This is a portfolio that spans a career, you know, many years that you've been putting in the work for. So again, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, I'm not on that level. Well, again, you're at a different point in your journey. And so, you know, to compare yourself is a little, you know, shouldn't do it, but to listen to Christy's story and get lessons from that and understand, see where she's talking about. And, you know, she mentioned kind of how she's gotten to those points. That's the thing you should resonate with, those are the things that should resonate with you. Not so much the end point. It's the along the journey. Parts.
Mm-hmm.
So, perfect. Christy, I hope you had some fun hanging out today.
I did. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I just want to kind of recap. So we talked about your work. We talked about your, you know, polymaths, and you've got this great website called cosmicteamwork.com where you've got articles and you can learn more information about polymaths. We talked about your artwork. And again, we're going to put some links in the show notes to some of this because it's just amazing stuff. and definitely check out Cricket the Sugar Horse. That is my favorite. We talked about your bed and breakfast, and we talked about your sense of passion around organizing in the community, especially the tech community. And people can check you out in the Central Florida Google Developer Group, or GDG, your work in Women Tech Makers, your work with the I Am Remarkable with Google program, which I personally am going to go check out. And, you know, we talked about DevFest Florida, which is a fantastic, event. And now this year it's going to be virtual on November 14th. We'll put all of that information in the show notes. So, you know, thank you again, Christy. And thank you all for listening. So, you know, next week we'll be back again with another amazing person that I know that just happens to write code for a living. Until then, be well, everyone. But if you don't mind, please subscribe to the podcast, like it, talk to your friends, tell your friends about it. We want some more listeners so we can hear have more people listening to these amazing stories. So again, until then, be well.